Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. As the weather warms up, homeowners are getting their backyards in order for outdoor gatherings. If you have a deck, what do you need to do to get ready for company? And if you don't have one, what do you need to know to have one built? Joining us to talk about that and answer all of your deck questions is Shane Heath. He's the owner of Battlefield Custom Decks and Patios. Yes, the doctor is in. Lines are open. Give us a call right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Shane, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Hi, Harold. Thank you so much for having me on your radio show tonight.
Absolutely. So let us start with some of the basics for those who have decks right now. Let us say, and I have a concrete patio, but I don't have a deck, so we'll get to my problems in a bit. But sure. Let's first talk about cleaning. The decks have been exposed to the winter elements, and so now it's time to do more than just sweep some of the dead leaves off. What do you suggest for cleaning decks, and does it matter what the deck is made out of?
It absolutely does. So let's start with the two types of primary decks that you would have in this scenario. You would have a deck that's fully constructed of wood, meaning all the framing, decking, and all the rails, stairs, everything is constructed out of wood. And then you would have what we would refer to as a composite deck, where all the framing members are constructed out of wood, but the flooring, rails, and so forth are all done with composite plastic materials. So, okay. Talking about cleaning a wood deck, the best way to do it is just the old-fashioned, having it pressure washed. If you're going to do it yourself or pay somebody, you just want to make sure that you don't over pressure wash the deck, meaning that you don't get too close with the pressure washer where you're actually stripping into the wood. You just want to lightly wash the deck. And there's deck cleaners you can get at the big box stores that you can run through those pressure washers to help clean the grime off. And with composite decks, you can actually use a homeowner grade pressure washer, electric one that you can get at a big box store. Those you can, most homeowners can get those. They're affordable and accessible and easy to work with. And they'll do a lighter grade wash for the plastics and composites. So what? If you have a composite deck, get an electric pressure washer that doesn't have too high of pressure. It just needs to knock the dirt off it. If you have a wood one, you're going to need to use a high-powered pressure washer. Typically, you're going to pay somebody to do that unless you own one, or you can rent one at some of the big box stores as well.
Now, you say clean off the dirt, but what about those wood decks that appear to have, is it mold or moss or?
Yeah, and it looks like green mildew. That's exactly what you're using the high pressure washer for, to get that stuff off.
But you said don't apply too much pressure.
Yeah, what you don't want to do, and it's one of those things that somebody who's used one before will know what I'm talking about, but to somebody who's never used one, it's kind of hard to tell until you get into using it. But you're getting close enough to it to where you're knocking off that dirt and grime, but you're not getting so close that you're actually stripping the wood and making it fur up and have little splinters everywhere.
Yeah, no one wants a splinter.
So that is a skill set to have. That's the reason why people pay people to do that. But that doesn't mean you can't do it yourself if you feel like renting the equipment and giving it a go.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about getting your deck on your home together, making sure it's clean, making sure it's presentable for the warm weather months. If you have a comment, if you have a question about either perhaps having a deck built or making sure that your deck is maintained, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, so after the cleaning, and if you have one of those wooden decks, first of all, and I'm, and again, I don't have one, so I'm going to ask some real basic questions. Are all wooden decks made out of the same kind of wood? And does that make a difference?
For the most part, yes. Most of the decks that you're going to find in this area, in the D.C., Northern Virginia, Maryland area, are going to be constructed out of pressure-treated pine lumber. And so, you know, with that, once it's cleaned, you're going to want to have it stained and sealed with some sort of sealer that has a water protectant and a UV protectant in it. But one of the biggest problems that I see in that area is homeowners will go and get a stain or sealer from one of the big box stores that will say a water-based hybrid, and they're user-friendly because they're water-based, so it makes cleanup easy. The problem with those products are they're actually a latex base, which means when you apply that stain or sealer to the wood, it doesn't actually soak into the wood. It encapsulates the wood. It's kind of like a plastic coating, mm-hmm. if you would. And so really the best thing to do is to try and true, get an oil-based stain sealer. Make sure it's 100% oil-based. That way you know it's penetrating into the wood. It's going to get in there, and it's going to do what it's supposed to do, and it's going to outperform the water-based products.
You can, I would imagine, do this yourself, provided, of course, that you don't have one of those decks that sits, you know, way up in the air. You know, if you've got a two-story home or even a two-and-a-half-story home or what have you, I know that that's a whole safety issue that you need to be aware of. But short of that, which is better? Is it better to do it yourself, to stain the deck yourself? Can it be restained if it's been stained before? Or is it better to pay someone to do it if you don't, you know, if you're not a patio Picasso?
Yeah, if you're not handy and you don't feel comfortable with doing it, I would pay a professional to do it. Just, you know, I always tell people that your time is money as well. You know, and so if you're going to get out there and try to do something you haven't done like that before, you know, it can end up being a big headache. But if you're fairly handy and crafty, you know, a lot of people can tackle jobs like that and find it's not too difficult for them. So it really just depends on your comfort level of doing that. You know, most of the products, like what I'm talking about, using an oil-based stain to seal your deck with, you can apply it with just a plain paint roller and brush and do it in an afternoon.
How many coats? If that's a question, I mean, is it...
With an oil-based product, you're going to want to do two coats at least. And then, you know, so with that, you're going to want to apply it, you know, early in the day and get your second coat on by late afternoon or the following day, 24 hours later. But usually the can will tell you that the dry time is in between the first and second coats.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to homeowners who have decks that they want to maintain, keep them looking good, keep them safe. If you have a question, give us a call. Let me talk to Derek. Derek calling from D.C. Derek, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
All right. I was calling because I was just trying to get the pricing of a good deck. Like, how did the pricing go? If I wanted a 16 by 20 deck or something like that, how do I get the pricing number, the proper pricing?
Shane, did you hear his question?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, the easiest thing to do really is just to call a local deck builder in your area and have them come out and give you a free estimate for it. So I know, you know, we're a Northern Virginia-based company, and when people contact us, you know, we have sales guys that go out and they'll spend an hour with the homeowner talking with them and giving them a price for what it is they're looking to have done. So that would be the easiest route, really.
Mm-hmm. Derek, turn your radio down. I've got some background noise because I have another question that may help you with this whole, you know, pricing. Not one size fits all. I'm sure that's the case, Shane. I mean,
right.
You've got square decks, rectangular decks, triangular decks, octagonal decks, decks with decks with steps, decks without steps, green eggs and ham I am.
That's exactly right.
When it comes, you know, when it comes to decks, wood decks, composite decks, high decks, low decks, multi-level decks.
you nailed it right there. I mean, there are so many options, and so that's why it's special. If somebody call and take advantage of getting a free estimate.
Yeah, because, you know, Shane, I would imagine that it's what Derek is asking is, you know, such a non-specific question that, you know, decks can, well, you tell me, that, you know, they can run from what to what?
They can go anywhere from $5,000 all the way up to, you know, $200,000.
Woo!
So it just, like you said, it depends on the size. It depends on the material selections that you want to use for it. And so I think what makes most homeowners hesitant to call somebody is they don't want to have, you know, one of these high pressure sales companies come over where a guy sits there and, you know, beats him over the head for 2 hours trying to get him to buy something that they might not actually want to purchase at that moment. And so, you know, I know with our company, we're very candid when people call us. You know, we let customers know, hey, we're not a high-pressure sales company. We're going to come over. We're going to answer your questions. We're going to provide you with an answer, with an estimate. And then we'll follow up with you, you know, a couple days later after you've had time to think about it and see if you have any more questions before we proceed forward. And so I would say, you know, if that is something that, you know, your listener to listen to, and they're like, yeah, that's why I don't call anybody. I don't want somebody coming over and bugging me for 2 hours and I can't get them out of my house and they're trying to make me buy a deck right then and there. Just have a candid question for them and say, hey, do you guys use high-pressure sales tactics, or can you get in and out in a half hour? You know, come and take some measurements and provide me with a quote.
Derek, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about home decks, you know, those backyard decks that you entertain on during the warm summer months. What you need to know to keep it safe, and if you don't have one, what you need to know if you would like to have one built. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dwayne, calling from Bowie. Dwayne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I have a deck, and I put that that deck shield from Behr on my deck, and it was horrible. It was peeling up about 4 or 5 months later, and it would be okay if it peeled up all at once, but it peeled up, and then some stuck, you know, pretty tight, and I don't know what to do with, you know, do I sand it down, or do I just replace the planks all together?
Yeah, and so this is exactly why I said never use water-based products, because they don't soak into the wood. They only encapsulate it. And so they've made those products to market to homeowners who are maybe hesitant towards diving into using an oil-based stain pod, because the cleanup's just a little bit more tedious and a little bit more labor-intensive. But that product that you're talking about does exactly what you just said it does. It encapsulates the wood, and then eventually it dries up and starts cracking and flaking off. So the best thing you can do is, you know, get somebody to use a high pressure washer to try to pressure wash all of it off of there, or, you know, possibly sand it off. And then once you get it down back down to raw wood, you can just put an oil-based stain on, you'll be good to go.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Dwayne, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Beverly, calling from Maryland. Beverly, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a screened-in deck, and I'm interested in putting a hot tub on the deck. And I'm wondering if that is possible, and what type of prep work would be required.
It is possible. It just all depends on the framing of the screen and porch. Will it handle the weight load? And so a lot of times when we're building a screen and porch or a deck and we know a hot tub is going to go on it, we beef up the framing on it to support that weight. If that was not pre-planned when the screen and porch was built, then chances are you may not be able to put a hot tub on it without adding some additional framing to it, just to kind of make the deck a little bit more stronger to carry that weight load of adding all that water into the hot tub. And so you're, okay. You know, your best bet there is get somebody who's a professional to look at it and tell you if that's the case.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm so happy to have someone come out and give me a quote and see what prep work might be required.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, Beverly, once you get that done, I'm bringing my friends out, and we're going to inspect the hot tub as well after you get it built. We're all coming out, and we're going to have a party at Beverly's house. Beverly, be safe. Thank you so much. We have more questions tonight about making sure your deck is up to par, including some safety things, some cleaning things. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. Stretches in for John Mons tonight with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'll be back with this conversation on SiriusXM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are helping you with your home improvement this evening. We're talking about the deck on your home, keeping it safe, making sure it looks presentable. And if you don't have one, how to get one. The best tips on choosing a deck. My guest is Shane Heath. He is the owner of Battlefield Custom Decks and Patios. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you're having a little difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will get to you all the way up until 8 o'clock. I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, something that Beverly just said. So, do hot tubs weigh that much? I mean, I know you've got to take into consideration the volume of water and the size, you know, of the hot tub. But how much work are we talking about exactly to shore up an existing deck to make sure that it remains safe?
Yes, they absolutely do weigh a lot. Once you get that big, the hot tub itself is already rather heavy, but once you fill that thing up with water, they get extremely heavy. And so, you know, a lot of times it's just adding, you know, maybe a few joists and adding an extra support post somewhere. So sometimes, you know, you can get it done and it's not that big of a deal. Really the biggest headache of getting a deck, or excuse me, getting a hot tub on the deck is getting it up there because those things are so heavy. So depending on, you know, how high off the ground your deck is, it can be difficult to get that hot tub actually in place where you want it at.
I guess especially if perhaps there are no steps.
Right. Well, and even if there's steps, you're usually not going to carry a hot tub up the steps. You're going to remove a rail section and try to somehow, you know, hoist it up on there. It's like putting a piano.
Wow.
You know, into the house.
Yeah, that does sound a tad bit expensive.
Yeah, it can get pricey, but you know, nobody's buying a hot tub, you know, because they're, you know, they need one. They're usually buying a hot tub and put it on there because they just want what they want, you know?
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Val, calling from Maryland. Val, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I would like to know, I have an existing deck, and I wanted to find out, would I need to put more support under the deck to attach a freestanding steel pergola?
Is that like one of the ones that you would see at some place like Costco or something like that you can buy, or maybe from Lowe's or one of those places? And
yeah,
you have yourself?
it is steel, they said. And it's open at the top, you know, it's like crisscross at the top. It's not heavy. I mean, I don't know that it's heavy, but
typically not for one of those. Those are usually light enough that you can put them on a deck and it's not a problem at all.
Okay. Now, in terms of attaching it, I know that some people had used, like, concrete, but can you just drill the hole down in the deck and, you know, to attach it because it's a freestanding one?
I couldn't answer that question without looking at the technical specs for the item that you're talking about to see how they want that thing attached. Usually the type of items that you're referring to, they just sit right on top of the deck and you don't attach them with anything.
Oh, okay. So yeah, this one usually you just do have to attach it.
Okay, the one that you're talking about, it shows that it gets attached to the deck. Yeah, you'd have to look into the technical spec documents for that product and see what they say, because they should specify that in detail in their instructions.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's the best way to figure that
out. Val, thank you so much for your phone call. 202. Sure. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So I have a question about existing decks. And one of the things that we often see in, you know, older homes where the decks are ground level, but they still sit several inches above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
What do you recommend to keep creepy crawly critters out of those extra areas between the ground and the bottom of the deck?
It depends on how much space there is, but usually we will close those in with lattice or with extra decking. You know, you can frame it out and box it out and trim out the bottom of the deck to make it look nice, like it was meant to be there. So it just depends on how big that space is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the other things also that we've seen over the past several years, it's frightening examples of decks that collapse with too many people on them, or maybe just a few, but eventually those decks may collapse. What causes a deck to collapse beyond just the obvious of too many people? Is it attachments to the house? Is it poor support? And how do you protect against something like that happening?
Yeah, it can be a combination of all of that, really. So a lot of times it is the attachment to the house, and it can also be the supports, you know, that are the support posts that are supporting that deck. So it really just depends on how it was constructed. So usually when you hear stories of that sort of thing happening, it's because it was never built to code to begin with. So, you know, the joists were undersized, the posts, support posts were undersized, and the attachment to the house was not done correctly. So you kind of get a perfect storm of everything was just built wrong, and it held up long enough, you know, to have a couple people on it now and again. And then, you know, mom and dad are gone for the weekend, and the kids invite a bunch of their friends over, and they start jumping up and down on a poorly built deck, and a moment happens, and it just collapses.
Mm-hmm. Please go ahead.
Oh yeah, so I was going to say, you know, to, you know, if you feel like you want to have your deck looked at, you know, and you're not sure about the quality of the construction, you know, the best thing to do is just to call a local deck builder and ask them to come and do a inspection on the deck. A lot of them are going to charge to do that, but sometimes, you know, you might get a company that'll come out and they'll take a look at the deck in hopes that maybe they can sell you on, you know, repairing it or building you a new one.
Is there anything that a layman can possibly see that would suggest that their deck may be a safety hazard?
Yes, 100%. And I'm so glad you asked that question. I actually sent a link to your wonderful assistant that set this all up. That if you guys want, you can post it to your website at some point. But
you can you can give it to us now if you know the.
So I know the one in D.C. and I wasn't sure where your listeners.
They're everywhere, certainly
would be located. But if you're in D.C. or any of your local municipalities, just look up your local government building and zoning division, and that building and zoning division website will have what's called a typical deck detail or a deck guide, and it is the local municipality's specifications on how that deck should be constructed to code, what size all the wood members should be, all the mechanical fasteners that should be used, the metal fasteners, the sizes of them, all of that information would be in that deck detail. So if you didn't want to pay for a deck inspection, you could just get on local government website and look up their deck guide or their typical detail, and they'll give you the mechanical drawings, and you can look at it and then examine it next to your deck and see where the deficiencies are.
What could I eyeball What should I look for if I step out of my house and I have a wooden deck, whether it's on the ground or whether it's a second floor deck? What should I look for?
Well, if you're not looking at the deck guide like that I'm referring to, and you're just looking for signs of that you may have issues.
Yes.
You know, the first thing I would look for is, you know, is there any wood that looks rotted? Are there any, you know, bolts or fasteners that look like they're rusting out? A lot of times, you know, the age of your house, if you know that you live in a house that was built in the 50s or 60s and that deck's been there now for 50 years, chances are it was not built to current code standards and it was probably not built that great. So, you know, that can be a huge indicator right there.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine termites, wooden decks, always
a
concern.
Yeah, that'll be obvious because you'll see holes, right, in the wood. You'll see where they've been kind of gnawing on it and eating the wood away. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I often wonder. One of my neighbors, and I hate them because their backyard is so beautiful. But the guy, he works in construction, so he got a deal. But as I said, you know, I've got like a little concrete patio, and you know, but what you know, what they did was they just removed the concrete, which is you know got to be you know pretty rough in and of itself, and then they extended a ground level deck. It's just a straight you know very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Thing, but it would seem to me that something like that would be considerably cheaper than having you know something with legs and
absolutely yeah you know you can a deck like that's going to be probably half the price of a deck that's 4 feet off the ground, and ground level decks don't require in most places don't require a permit, so you don't have to go through that whole process of getting zoning and permit approval and paying all of those hundreds of dollars in fees. So, and it's obviously that's going to be a lot cheaper than concrete as well.
Talk to me a little bit about what you just said. That's something I wasn't aware of. You were talking about permits and fees. And so talk to me about that process. If I need to have a deck built that will require all of those things. Can you run through them for me, please?
Yeah, so once you build a deck that's suspended in the air, it requires a building permit because you have to do structural attachments to the house and have structural support in the ground to support the weight load of the deck. As soon as you build that deck up off of the ground, you have to hire a licensed contractor. They have to be able to, or unless you're going to build it yourself, you know, but they have to, you have to be able to pull the permits. You have to go to your local municipality, get zoning approval, which basically they're looking at your lot size and saying, hey, based off your lot size, yes, you can build that size of a deck, and that costs a fee, and you have to wait time to have that determined. And then once they approve it, it goes to the building and permitting, and they'll look at your plans and they'll say yes, that'll work, or no, that won't work. And you know, they're great at helping you, you know, guide you into the direction of how it needs to be built. But you know that you have to pay for a building permit as well. So you know, an average deck, you know, you can spend upwards of $500 to $600 just on the permitting fees.
Really?
Before you even spend anything on materials.
Wow, $500 or $600 just on the fees.
Yep.
Man, that. Oof. That,
depending on where you live at, too.
Yeah.
Size of the project.
Yeah. So, but I'm assuming that you're also paying for the legwork. That's not something that you, as the homeowner, would have to do.
It depends on the size of the project. If you're paying a company, that they're going to have their legwork included in the pricing. But you know, those permit fees can add up to close to $500 without paying anybody to do it.
So you mean I may have to go down to City Hall and pull the records and all of that myself?
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'll go with
so
that.
So if you can, you know, if you can build a ground level deck.
and very easy to have it done. And, you know, most companies can get in there right away because they don't have to go through any building permit process to build it.
I probably could do it myself out of Lego. But that's about the extent of my expertise. So definitely I would definitely have to call you, Shane, because beyond that, yeah, we're definitely doing
when
that.
You walk on it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then who do I sue after that? Look, Shane, I need to take a break, but when we come back, more questions for you about finding the best ideas for your deck, keeping it safe, keeping it looking good. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking to Shane Heath, owner of Battlefield Custom Decks and Patios, about getting your backyard in order. We've been speaking mostly about decks, but I do want to talk a little bit about patios, Shane. And if someone wants a complete redo, and say they don't have a fence, but they want a fence, do you do the patio first or do you do the fence first? What's your suggestion?
I will always tell people to get the patio done first and then build the fence last.
Why is that?
Well, it depends on the type of patio, really. But if there's going to be concrete involved, there's a lot of materials that have to get loaded into the backyard in order to do the construction. And sometimes you end up having to remove a section of the fence to get everything back there and the heavy equipment, depending on what's being done.
Mm-hmm.
So, it definitely makes life a lot easier for you and will save money to do the patio first and do the fence afterwards.
You mentioned concrete. What kinds of materials, including concrete, are used for patios? I mean, what are some of the options for patios? Let's just say, I'm not talking about some, you know, Wizard of Oz yellow brick road thing here, you know, but
yeah.
Let's just talk about just a square or rectangular, you know, patio where you can, you know, you can put your chairs out. But I'm sure that the material to build just that basic patio can vary.
They can. So there's three types of patios that we primarily do. We do what's called paver patios, and those are different brick type pavers that come in various sizes. Those are done over a gravel base. Then after that, we do stamped concrete and concrete patios where it's, you know, exactly what it sounds like. It's concrete formed up and poured. The stamped concrete patios that we do, you pour the concrete and then we stamp it to make it look like stone. And then it's dyed various colors depending on what color you want it to be, so it can kind of look like it's a real stone patio.
Oh, wow.
And then after that, we do what we would call a wet set stone patio, where it's a concrete base, but then we're mortaring stone to that and veneering it with stone to make it look like it's completely fabricated out of stone. And that's going to be your more higher-end expensive patio.
So what's the cheapest?
The paver patios are going to be the cheapest. And they're still great patios. Most patios that people have are paver patios. Yep.
Just pouring the concrete.
No, paver patios are actually like brick. They look like brick pavers. You know, and so if you can imagine what a brick driveway looks like or a cobblestone kind of look,
right?
They're like that. You know, and so you're excavating out the dirt to get a level surface, and you're throwing down a gravel base, and you're laying the pavers over top of that, and filling the joints in with sand.
I see. But how, okay, now that to me, just at first blush, it sounds like it may be high maintenance. So, I mean, if you've got gravel and then brick and then sand, what kind of maintenance would be required? Because if you've got, you know, people.
They're not too high maintenance. The downside to a paver patio is that if you've ever been on a patio that kind of is wonky and it has ripples to it and it's not level and even, that's a paver patio. I mean, they kind of you know, move and ebb and flow with the earth as
right.
they erode over time. And so they start off nice and flat and have a little bit of grade to them so that water will run off away from the house. But over time, as things settle and water causes erosion underneath of them, they'll start to get little ripples and rolls in them. And so you can't really do much to keep them level without constantly pulling pavers up and adding some more sand and stone underneath of them. But nobody's going to spend that much time doing that. And so a lot of times you just kind of let them go and, you know, keep the weeds out of the joints. You can spray them down with a weed killer to keep weeds from growing in between the joints. And there's kind of a natural look and beauty to them depending on the grade of pavers that we're using. So they can be really nice even as they age and kind of get imperfect, you know, mm-hmm. kind of the character of them.
For people who want to have a patio, say they have grass,
mm-hmm.
and they just have grass, but they say, look, I do want a patio here, and or even a parking pad for that matter. What mm-hmm. What's first things first?
As far as constructing it, or
what kind of decision making process do they need to what must they consider before and yes, the construction, because I would imagine, yeah, you got to remove the grass or anything else.
So really the biggest thing to consider is the slope of your yard. If you have a relatively flat yard, it's great to put a patio back there. As soon as you get any sort of slope to a yard, you can look at your yard and say, well, there's not much slope there. But if you put a string line running from your house straight out, you might find that the patio that you want, actually the ground drops 2 or 3 feet by the time it gets out to the front edge of that. And so then you're throwing a ton of gravel or a ton of concrete and building a retaining wall to kind of hold all that in. And so, you know, I think, you know, some people, you know, looking at your yard objectively and going, hey, is this flat or is there actually a nice little drop here? Am I going to really be spending a lot of money building up the ground to have a flat patio? And at that point, you know, I would tell people, hey, just build a deck there, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, as far as designs, I would imagine the more elaborate the design, the more the cost.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's all size-based, too, right? So the bigger you go, the more elaborate the design, depending if you're adding sitting walls or a fire pit or, you know, what have you. All those factors drive the price up.
Now, what is hardscaping?
So hardscapes would be the latter of what, you know, hardscapes is kind of the overarching category of when you're talking about patios, retaining walls, stonework, sidewalks. But usually when we're referring to hardscapes, we're going to be talking about a concrete base that's overlaid and veneered with stone. And so when you see a lot of your really nice or high-end patios where it looks like this beautiful slate stone, that's how those are constructed. The whole base and all the walls are built out of concrete and cinder block, and then everything's veneered with stone.
So essentially you're talking about the house outside. That's what it kind of sounds like.
It's similar, yes. When you see houses that have stone on them, it's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But you've probably walked across what I'm talking about a million times and never gave it 2 thoughts. You know,
probably not.
But the benefit to them is they don't, you know, versus a paver patio, they're always going to stay the way you constructed them. They're not going to get wonky and unlevel and water start pulling up on them and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are your thoughts on fire pits, permanent or the kind that you buy in the store, whether we're talking about the aesthetics, safety?
I love permanent fire pits. You know, if it's in your budget to build one and you like hanging around a fire pit, you cannot go wrong with a fire pit. They're absolutely wonderful to have. You know, you can throw a whole lot of logs in there and roast marshmallows with the kids, and you know, people love to entertain and hang around them. The ones that you can get a kit, those are fine. If you don't have space for a permanent fixed one and building one on patio, those will do in a pinch.
Mm-hmm. But you also, I mean, the more I'm talking to you about this,
yeah.
I mean, aside from the dollar signs with the wings on them, but the thought of a more permanent fire pit outside is it's intriguing. It's really tempting. But what, you know, what do you need to know about your home or your patio or your backyard before even thinking about something like that?
Yeah, so with permit affixed fire pits, you depending on where you live at, most places you have to be at least 15 to 16 feet away from the house to have one. And so, you know, if you don't have a whole lot of, you know, backyard, that might put your fire pit up against the fence, you know. So that's one thing you got to consider.
Okay. I know I only have a couple of minutes left, but any final thoughts or overarching things that, whether we're talking about the decks, the patios, driveways, anything, you know, because I know you've got some, you may have some unscrupulous or you know, fly-by-night folks out there. What your suggestions about picking someone to do your deck, patio, or the like?
Yes, absolutely. So I always tell people, you know, don't be afraid to ever ask a contractor questions that may be uncomfortable or make you feel uncomfortable or make them feel uncomfortable. And usually, hey, are you licensed and do you have insurance? You know, a lot of people seem to like it's a taboo thing to ask that as if it's rude. But the reality is, you know, if they're a licensed insured contractor and you ask that question, they'll be happy to answer that question with a yes and then have proof of that. If they're not, they're usually going to be kind of wishy-washy and talk around it. And if that's the case and you kind of have that gut instinct that, hey, they're not being 100% transparent up front immediately, then, you know, if it smells like a duck and walks like a duck, quack, quack, right?
Right. But how would you know? I mean, if I said, okay, how do I find that out?
Yeah, absolutely. And so they should be able to provide you with their business license and contractor license number, and then you should be able to look that up with your local government municipality. Every one of them will have a license lookup search engine. And so depending on where you live at, you can search for that. You know, here in Virginia, we have what's called DPOR, it's the Department of Professional Occupational Regulatory. And so you can go on their website, type in the contractor's license number and look up, you know, are they actually in business? Do they have a license? Are they licensed? You know, are they in good standing? Do they have any, you know, complaints out against them from other customers that they may have done wrong and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Shane, just because you were able to remember the name of that office, I believe you.
Yep.
Because that was a tongue twister.
They're different with every area. So whether you're in Maryland or D.C. or Virginia, just depends on where you are. But here's what I would do. I would say look up the contractor license lookup. And every municipality is going to have that. You'll be able to just do a Google search for business license search or contractor license search. And so you would just ask that contractor, hey, you know, can you provide us with your license number? And they should be like, they should have no problem providing that to you. And you can just search online and find out within seconds.
Shane Heath, Battlefield Custom Decks and Patios. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. You have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. You too. Thank you for having me.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, April 15th, for News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.